You're listening to Pod 4 Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4, .com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
I'm Jason Snell.
I'm David J. Lohr.
I am Monty Ashley.
I'm Rand Caldwell in The Place to Be.
Welcome to the strangest podcast project ever imagined.
Exactly. Exactly. My shot. This is a big... So this is track three, but it is huge because this is the motif that runs through the entire musical, because throwing away my shot, which is introduced here, is so important for, part of it is the theme of, you've got to take a shot. You can't wait. You have to, this is your chance at glory, but it is also literally about throwing away your shot in a duel, which is what dooms Hamilton, spoiler alert for history.
it's on the logo.
It is literally in the logo of the show. So super important song. It is of vital importance to everything that is going to follow for the rest of the show right here near the beginning of the show.
Yeah, so no big deal, really.
No.
It's also super important from a character standpoint, because up to this point, we've only heard Alexander being kind of cautious and tentative and polite. And this is where he can't stop himself from doing all these ridiculous multisyllabic rhymes and talking trash to the world.
Right.
Who's this kid? What's he going to do?
Right. And the whole theme of just like my country, I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. I mean, this is, which is one of the cleverest things in a show full of clever things. But this is Hamilton springing into action because he is, he's done some school. He is entering the fray for the revolution. He's got his buddies, and there's that moment, which is definitely a reference to what actually happened to Hamilton, where it's, we've got to get this guy in front of a crowd, where, there's this realization that he is actually this incredibly talented person who, he gives a speech to actually save the head of King's College from being killed by a mob.
Yeah,
as he's climbing out a window.
As he sneaks out the window. Yeah. Yeah. No, the thing that I love so much about this song, and it took me a while to really, really be a fan of the song, but what started to get me was specifically the complex language that Hamilton uses when he's introducing himself, when he's rapping. I am a huge Gilbert and Sullivan fan. That is my, I'm not a huge rap person, but I love Gilbert and Sullivan. I love fast songs. I love smart songs. And this is really the tune that where the musical just lays it out on the table. Alexander Hamilton, the first song of the musical gives an introduction of kind of what you're looking at. Some slow melodic, yeah. How Does a Bastard Orphan.
Yeah.
But this is the song where we really get a feel of what the speed that the musical is operating at, both lyrically, musically, and intellectually. You've got so many. You've got multisyllabic rhymes. You've got rhymes, multiple rhymes in the same line. And on top of that, what I really love from in the way that My Shot carries in from the previous song, you've got a minor introduction to the various Hamilton's various compatriots and adversary
yeah.
in the previous song. This is the song where after they hear him do his first essential, I'm going to get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. Like, they hear that and immediately you get you get Lafayette and Mulligan and Lawrence basically being like, oh, I can do this too. I can, like, and their raps are still simple. This is the interesting thing to me,
right.
Is that their raps are still like, da-da, 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 but they are suddenly using more complex language.
I think the raps are a little more complicated than they are in Aaron Burr, Sir. Like, you suddenly have Mulligan dropping Latin in the middle of his thing.
Rhyming apprentice with in loco parentis. Yeah. I love this. I love it so much.
And Lafayette still can't speak English that well.
No, this is his, but this is still his story arc thing where it's the you know, he's, it's his lack of capability in English that is in his rap, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, but he still manages to rhyme anarchy pronounced two different ways with two different words.
Monarchy, anarchy, anarchy, panicky. It's
it's a very fancy move. It reminds me of a rhyme in Popular in Wicked where Galinda...
Popular, Lar, one.
Instead of being really who you were, are, there's nothing that can stop you from becoming popular, Lar. That taking the same word, pronouncing it two different ways, and making them both rhyme and fit is very fancy.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing is, I mean, he did do this intentionally where, you know, Mulligan and Lafayette and Lawrence have a very simple kind of rhyme scheme, a very simple style of singing. And he wanted Hamilton to be like this blast from another century, just, you know, so many steps beyond. And bringing the rest of them up through the rest of the show, because they get more complex as they go along too. But he hits the ground running. And I mean, I love how it literally cuts off the previous song. It just jumps right in there. So much so that I actually had to look at the track listings to go, oh wait, this is a different song. Okay. When did that song end? Okay.
Yeah. The chords go in really nicely though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like, dude, da 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 da.
Well, and then Burr breaks into the song, so there's some turnabout too, because he breaks in with his genius's lower your voices line.
Keep out of trouble and you double your choices.
Yeah, so which is you know, again, so establishing of Burr as the guy who doesn't want to take his shot. He's very careful. But it's also him, you know, throwing a bucket of cold water on the enthusiasm that everybody else is showing in this song. So it's a nice, I like that turnabout from Aaron Burr reasserting himself here.
And right in his first set of lines to throw in a little reference to South Pacific with "you've got to be carefully taught" is just a lovely little, oh. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, every time I hear this described as, oh, it's the hip hop musical, it's so much more than that because it's a fusion, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm listening to this and yeah, I'm getting some of the hip hop and the rap references throughout the whole score, but I'm hearing the Gilbert and Sullivan and the Sondheim and Cole Porter woven in there too. I mean, this is square right down the middle of Broadway musicals. I mean, you don't need to know hip hop or like hip hop to get this as a Broadway fan.
What amazes me about this score as a whole is the way that it's put together so that there's something for everybody. If you come in as a hip hop fan, there are hundreds of hip hop references hidden away between the backbeats and little references. But if you come in as a musical fan, it's a mound of glory. It's, you know, it's Gilbert and Sullivan, it's South Pacific, it's Stephen Sondheim, it's Rodgers and Hammerstein.
I'm so glad they put the lyrics up online and they're publishing a book later this year that has all the lyrics and everything, because I bought the CDs so I would have the booklets, and I'm looking in the booklets and of course, you know, the whole score is so intricate. There are points where it's not just like two lines of lyrics are going down the page. There are five lines of lyrics all weaving in and out of each other at the same time. That's how complex the melodies are and the language and the rhymes and everything. It's impossible to read. So yay, internet.
Yeah.
If you believe the internet, and I think this one is a stretch, the line "you've got to be carefully taught," that's definitely a South Pacific reference. It rhymes with "I'm with you, but the situation is fraught." That could be a funny thing happened on the way to the forum reference.
It could be.
Words are in that musical, and we know Lin-Manuel Miranda likes Sondheim.
It's also a phrase that exists in the world, but yeah, it could be. So one of the things that strikes me about this, listening back to it many, many, many times, because that's what one does with Hamilton, is how it begins with just the voice of Hamilton singing, "I'm not throwing away my shot." And when you talk about the different styles throughout the musical, but even in this song, this begins, I would say it's earnest. His voice, you know, his voice just singing in this unadorned way, it's kind of thin. There's not a lot to it. And that, I think it's kind of striking because then he kicks in to the rap portion. And it completely changes, and I love that that it's almost like a shifting gears.
Yeah,
where we kick out of the sort of standard, "I'm going to stand at center stage and tell you earnestly I'm not throwing away my shot," and then, oh my God, it is something completely different.
And then later on in the song, you can hear him suddenly shift gears when he feels he's going too far with a bunch of revolutionary manumission abolitionists. "Give me a position, show me where the ammunition is." You know, then he takes a step back.
You could get the scratching record sound and put it in there.
Right? goes back to the single syllable rhymes saying, "I promise that I'll make you all proud." And then like 20 seconds later, he's going crazy again.
Yeah.
And he's past patiently waiting.
Well, I love that because that's a moment where you get the sense which Monty, I know you and I have both been reading the book about Alexander Hamilton. I don't know if
Well.
Same here. Yep.
Okay, we've all been doing that. Okay, this is a really nice character moment because Hamilton could get carried away.
He has
passionate guy.
That's his life. Yeah,
and so this is what happens here is he has gotten carried away, and there's that moment of like, oh, am I talking too loud? Sometimes I get excited, and then his buddies are like, oh man, get a load of this guy. We gotta get this guy in front of a crowd.
we love you guys.
But Hamilton has that moment of like, oh geez, I kind of let the moment get away from me there. Did I come on a little too strong? And the answer is yes, Alexander Hamilton, you always come on a little too strong.
It's weird. When Lin-Manuel Miranda read the book, he thought, this guy is so hip hop because, you know, he was born on a small island and wrote poetry and got off it. When I read
and he
read
has
the book,
feuds.
Yeah. When I read the book, I kept thinking, this guy is just like the internet. When he gets mad, he writes a 30,000 page screed and then makes up another identity to praise the first fake identity.
That's right.
He started so many papers.
He also reminds me of the Music Man and talking his way in and out of things.
Yeah.
And very, you know, again, a similar kind of style of lyric and intricacy of lyric as the Music Man. One of the things I love in the song is when it comes to that point where he says, "I imagine death so much it feels more like a memory."
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this song, like we said, it's basically the mission statement of the show. And it lays everything out. It gives you the foreshadowing. And it's not just the foreshadowing of the shot itself, but the fact that he is going to die at the end. We all know it. Mm-hmm. The show is in the framework of Burr starting off by saying, "That's the guy, I killed him." Right? So the whole show is a flashback. So it's already memory. And then at the end of the show, not to get ahead of ourselves, but there is that moment where he is shot. And he has this wonderful moment of the whole show flying before his eyes as a soliloquy, as a song.
Right.
And that's this right there. The little bits and pieces of this come back in that song.
It's also the point of the biography and of the first song here that his life in the Caribbean was so awful.
It was insanity.
And so living day to day and not having expectations, and that Hamilton very clearly in the biography and in this story that we're going to tell, he has no expectation. This is also with his mother dying and his relative who took he and his brother in killing himself and all of these terrible things that happened to him. He has no expectation. He's of living. He's had death surrounding him all along. It's a miracle he's gotten as far as he did. So we learn that about his character. It also lets us have that moment where George Washington later will tell him, "Dying is easy, living is harder," because this is the fatalistic. We have to make this moment last. He's living for the moment. He's reckless, and it's fitting with his character here.
And for the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow.
Right,
that's
exactly
what he gets to by the end of the song.
Right.
Well, exactly. I mean, when you think about, again, looking at his past, looking at Hamilton's early life as a child and basically having one real friend who we don't even hear about in the musical because it gets condensed.
Yes.
Hamilton lived a very full life in his relatively few years. But this is really the first time, especially in the musical, the first time that we see him actually interacting with people who feel the way that he does, and he feels like it's not just him and his books. It's not just him alone against the world. He has a group. I've never had a group of friends before. And together they can potentially make something. I mean, I think there's something very poignant about the fact that Hamilton goes into his basically internal soliloquy right after Lawrence basically riles the entire crowd up in that bar. It was like, when are these colonies going to rise up? We're going to do this.
Well, that's also the moment where the song pivots, which is the introduction of Rise Up. Right.
Exactly.
And that's the beginning of the revolution. That is, we are all going to rise up. And that gives Hamilton his cause to fight for, the thing that is going to make him think past tomorrow.
That's also like the third musical or lyrical motif in this song.
I know.
That's going to be played throughout the entire show. You could skip the first two songs, and I feel this song would basically serve the role of an overture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
You hear this, and you're going to be hearing this the rest of the night.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you know, he talks about having, you know, when he read the book, he identified with Hamilton. He saw him as very hip hop. But and I can kind of see that in this as thinking in terms of a theater person. You know, every time you start a new show or a new company and you start working together and you suddenly feel like you've never had friends like this before. These are your people, right? These are the group of people that are going to make this thing happen.
Yeah.
And as a theater kid, you know, I can see him doing that too, being like, well, of course, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that this song does a good job of giving us, even though, you know, most people know about it, although I was just talking to somebody who heard us talking about Hamilton on the Incomparables year-end episode, and who's English and had never even heard of it, and said, do I need to know about American history? And I said, just listen to it. It's super catchy. And then he came back and said, oh my God, it's so great. I had to look up some things, and now it's even better now the second time. I was like, yes, that's how it happens to all of us. But it does, my shot does at least lay out the important things, the things you need to know. There is a in journalism you would call it like the nut graph. It is like, this is what this is about. If you don't know about the American Revolution, I've got it for you. Britain keeps shitting on us endlessly. They tax us relentlessly. King George turns around, runs a spending spree. We've got it. There will be a revolution in the century. The idea that this is going to happen, it's inevitable, and then we get the stage direction, as said by the writer of the musical, playing the character, enter me, he says in parentheses.
I love the way enter me, the whatever effect they have on it. I really enjoy how angry and pointed I am interpreting that as saying.
It's like, almost through a megaphone, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little reverb and bass happening when it's enter me.
I think it's supposed to sound like a megaphone, but to me it sounds like somebody just really bearing down, just like, enter me. Here I come now.
Yeah, well, but it also reminds me, going back to that theater thing, it reminds me of headsets, of stage manager headsets. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of, sometimes the audio gets distorted a little bit when you're listening on those. And God knows, I spent many an hour in a sound booth calling cues and listening for cues. And I don't know, there's something about that. And of course, the entire show's theme of the narrative, writing yourself into the narrative, writing yourself out of the narrative, capturing the narrative, retelling the narrative, who lives, who dies, who tells your story. Mm. The fact that Hamilton basically takes charge of the narrative in this song. Hamilton's like, this is my narrative. This is my story, and my story and my shot may be synonymous in some areas and may not be in others. But this is me laying down what I'm about. And where I'm going, what's going to get me into trouble.
being Burr's flashback too, it's interesting that after the introduction song, the first real song is them introducing themselves to each other. But then this is, yes, it is literally where he takes over. He's like, I'm the star of this show. Yeah. You know, it's not called Burr.
I like the brag here too, because that's really to me, that's a thing that's like a part of rap that I've always appreciated, is that a lot of rap is how great I am.
Yeah.
And that's what why I love Don't Be Shocked When Your History Book Mentions Me, because that's him taking it. He's going to own it. He's going to wear it. He's like,
oh, yeah,
I am the star of my own show. Literally.
It's going to happen.
Traditionally, I think a musical at this point would have the character say what he wants. And this musical has the character say, this is what's going to happen. Uh-huh. Your history book's going to mention me.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I do wonder, looking at the show, is whether or not this is Burr actually being like, what is it like in Hamilton's shoes, and reimagining what Hamilton is thinking in some ways.
Yeah.
It's an alternate reading on it, because we've got plenty of Burr, you know, stepping in and singing and talking about, you know, I don't know what's going on in Hamilton's brain later on in the musical. But at the same time, it's having listened to this enough, it's interesting to try and shift on its axis and look for different clues. And I do find it interesting. The bradacchio of Hamilton being Hamilton is there, but there's a lot of hints that seem almost like a third part. I mean, a third party was writing this, but you know, it's there's some self-awareness of the future.
Envy of not wanting to wait, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what Hamilton is talking about, even in this song, is not waiting anymore. I'm not going to wait. You can do your thing, Burr, and I'm going to just keep going. And, you know, how much of that is Hamilton and how much of that is Burr Hamilton, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, it is an interesting. Now I want to listen to the whole thing again with that in my brain.
I think the plan of this entire podcast is that every time you listen to one of these, you're like, God, I got to listen to the whole thing.
You got to have the context.
That's the beauty of this song, or like this whole musical. Uh-huh. Every time I talk to somebody about Hamilton, and this is why I really do think that it goes up on one of my all-time favorite musicals. Every time I talk to somebody about the score, even if it's just like, oh, you got to listen to this, or, oh, you just listened to this song, it makes me immediately want to go back and start the thing start to finish. I read an article a couple weeks ago talking about the orchestration in My Shot, and just the orchestration of Alex Lacamoire in general. And that caused me to go back and listen to the entire score, trying to, I just did it by brain, muting vocals and really just listening for the strings, for the banjos, for the computer effects. And it's a completely different show when you listen to it like that. There's so many this show is so multifaceted. And I love that. I love that you're peeling away the onion every time you listen to this song again or the show again.
Well, it's like there's a quote from a Mobb Deep song in there where, you know, it's like, where he says, I'm only 19, but my mind is older, and the strings in the background come rising up like, what's the song? Oh, I had it. I just had it. Well, anyway. but again, that's intentional, and it's not just Lynn putting it into the lyrics. It's Lacamoire putting it into the orchestrations, which I love smart orchestrators. Oh, my God.
I wanted to throw out something about, there's a line late in this song about, if we win our independence, is that a guarantee of freedom for our descendants, or will the blood we shed begin an endless cycle of vengeance and death with no defendants? I like this because something that you get out of the Cherno biography is, which struck me, and I think I knew this, but it struck me anew anyway, which is this, the American Revolution is like, the Civil War is basically embedded in the American Revolution. Slavery and what to do with slavery was clearly a problem. It was a problem that they deferred and actually made a deal to defer it for quite a while because they wanted to get the deal done of declaring the independence from the United States. But it was a compromise baked in from the beginning. And I like this because this is a question about, you know, all men are created equal. You know, there's a question about the treatment of women. There's the question about how blacks in the United States are treated, how the slaves are treated. It is all wrapped up in here, and they were aware of it. This is not just history looking back on it. They were aware of how compromised this was. So that's a nice moment when he's just kicking off the revolution here. He is asking the question of, like, what happens when this is over, and is there, are we creating more trouble? And because the fact is, yeah, like less than 100 years later, there was going to be a lot more trouble. But so I like that knowledge. You know, this show has throughout a knowledge of the future. That's just, it's just in there, and that's okay.
Well, and we get that first hint of the, again, foreknowledge, and also the fact that Hamilton is thinking about this stuff so early,
right,
in that third, you know, that third soliloquy, where he's essentially, you know, he hits on
the financial stuff, right?
Yeah, he's already thinking of it. Yeah. And the beauty of this is, you know, the average theater person can go and watch the show and just be like, oh, I see what you did there. That's a nice callback, you know, call in. But Hamilton was actually thinking about this stuff. Hamilton was researching financial systems while he was running around with the militia.
Exactly.
Which is insane to me. And the question of
are we a nation of states and what's the state of our nation? I mean, that was something that he was instrumental in with the Federalist Papers, especially in making this argument that that Americans need to think of themselves as Americans first and not, you know, citizens of a particular state.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, it's huge stuff.
I think it's useful to remember that Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations was published in 1776.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they weren't just thinking of, let's start America. Everything was Age of Enlightenment, and let's throw everything out the window and invent a whole new system for everything in the world.
And Hamilton said, okay.
Yeah.
Good idea. Let's do that. I got some ideas. I got some thoughts. And I'm not throwing away my shot. And that's how we end. It's pretty great. I mean,
take a shot. Yeah.
And it's literally everyone in the room joining together to rise up and take their shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually take a shot of liquor as well as take the shot.
Well, okay.
Into the revolution.
We didn't even mention that. That is another, another beautiful double meaning here is that the boys in his little gang are drinking along as they do throughout this story.
Raise a glass to something, something. It's not that song yet.
No, and take a shot.
And that also is pretty historically accurate. Most of the meetings were in bars. And
yes.
I was just talking to someone. Yeah, I was just talking to someone today about revolutionary drinking. And I guess there was an article published a while back in like Slate or something where someone actually tried to do 24 hours or like a normal day of drinking as seen through the eyes of a revolutionary soldier.
Ooh,
and it's like, wow. Three glasses of cider to start the morning, whiskey and high tea, and then by mid-afternoon, I think the person was just like, nope,
I'd imagine the alcohol percentage in those days was a lot less, but the point was that distilled stuff was safe to drink.
Oh, yeah.
So that was one of the reasons why people drank more alcohol, is that alcohol was a beverage that was actually not going to make you sick.
Give you dysentery or anything fun like that.
That's a reason.
And they didn't have iPhones. So
that's true. So what else are you going to do? You're going to take a shot.
You're going to think past tomorrow.
Anything more about my shot? It's the core of the whole thing. It really is. There's like huge important portions of the entire show that are introduced here.
My I will say only two more things. The fact that Lawrence from the beginning, all of his lyrics are about freeing people and working with people that are currently less well endowed in their rights than he. When he's talking about, you know, watch as I sally in on a stallion with the first black battalion, mm-hmm. which is, aside from being a fantastic rhyme, just a really, you know, it's what he died for. Or the fact that in the rise up chorus, it's not only tell your brother he's got to rise up, it's tell your sister she's got to rise up, it's everybody. Where are these colonies as a whole? I really appreciate the nod to, like, there were people thinking about everybody, and it wasn't just, oh yes, revolution for the people that matter. And especially given the racial casting of the show, I think it's really important. It's really important to recognize, you know, even if history did not turn out to be the way that I think some folks would have wanted it, there were people thinking about it in 1776. It wasn't like, yeah, the issues of race and the issues of gender were just completely off the table.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is he took 6 years to write the show. He took 1 year to write this song.
And I
that shows
it.
You that shows you how important the song is as the cornerstone of the show. As he put it, this is where Hamilton shows off his oratory for the first time. and every couplet had to be amazing.
Yeah,
and it is. And they pretty much are, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, yep. Except for the times when he consciously steps back, says, oh, am I talking too loud?
Yeah.
No? Okay. Whoosh.
Yeah, all right. Time to rap insanely.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. The only other thing, Philip doesn't live past 20.
Mm.
I just learned this from Rap G. That's sad.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing!
Mm-hmm. What? There's foreshadowing in this thing.
The beautiful irony, you know, it's baked in there.
Yep.
Yep.
So much.
All right. That's it for David J. Lohr, Monty Ashley, and Serenity Caldwell. I'm Jason Snell. That is Pod for Ham. Take a shot, and I am not throwing away my shirt.